Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Motzei Shabbos of Pesach, meaning Motzei Shabbos Chol Hamoed, obviously. It's tonight, Saturday night here in Baltimore. I don't know what time it is elsewhere. And I want to say a few words, because the time is short. Tomorrow night is already Yom Tov. And I want to share a few words that I said in Shul today, as far as Shir Hashem is concerned. In honor of Mishpachas Stefanski, who again, Pesal and family are located in Eretz Yisrael now as we speak. And we wish them all a good Moed, a good Yom Tov. And they flew in right when the bombs were flying, just right after that. Thank God there's been no similar repeat of that. Shir Hashem. I'm going to say a few words in favor of the art scroll, believe it or not, meaning the non-literal translation. As you know, Shir Hashem, we always recite every Pesach, either Shabbos or whatever the schedule, however it works out. And it's an old custom. I don't think it's universal, but I think it's pretty doggone universal. And it's very interesting because, as I said before, Shir Hashem is understood in different ways. I've spoken, I'm sure, in the past about the fact that Shir Hashem was controversial. Obviously, it's one of the five books that they talk about in different sources, in the Mishnah and the Gemara, about whether or not it should be included in the Bible. You know, Eov and Esther and Shir Hashem and Koheles and Yecheskel. And without going through all the others, in the case of Shir Hashem, it's pretty obvious. What's the love story? It's too erotic, and so forth and so on. So you can totally understand why there are people who objected to it. And as we know, it got in anyway. Rebbe Kiva says, Shir Hashem is Matamasi Adayin, and it's Kodesh HaKadoshim, or Kodesh Kodoshim, to be more exact. So it's not Kodesh, but it's Kodesh Kodoshim. So that means he's looking in a mystical way. In the history of Judaism, we have a very, very rich history, and not a monolithic as people imagine. Shir Hashem, as an example of fact, you've always had tension, an existential tension, between the rationalists and the mystics within Judaism. Each one has their Dalai Lamas, and they've always contended, and they still do. And there are some people who are going to be drawn towards the rationalistic side, and that speaks to them, and the mystical side does not. And other people, the opposite, the mystical side speaks to them, and the rational does not. And there are people who shift in life, and there's nothing wrong with that, I just said. Okay? As long as you're a Shomer Mitzvah and all the rest of it, you believe in the basics, whether your approach is a mystical one or rationalistic one, it's just interesting. It makes it either better or worse. The mystics always have tinas on the rationalists that their stuff is brittle and easily falls away, or leads going too far to the left, as was time of post-Maimonides. The rationalists always tell the mystics that you're credulous. You believe any Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes down the road. And there are certainly examples of that. And of course, they say, just so somebody says something mystical doesn't mean it's true. On the other hand, the rationalists do not deny that Judaism has a mystical core, if you think about it. Even Maimonides, as I said before, believes in the Yesh Me'ayin at the end of the day. And without going into that subject, there's a mystical core there. Mysticism is defined as you assert something is real, even though you realize it's not subject to empirical verification. By definition, it's not subject to empirical verification. And so if you're rationalist, something has to be subject to some sort of verification. In the old days, it would be through philosophical argument. Nowadays, it'd have to be through some kind of science, which is not possible. And so it's a whole meandering. But Shir Hashem, certainly if it got accepted into Jewish tradition, it was on the basis of a mysticism. You know what I'm saying? In fact, I would say it's the hallmark literature of Judaism in terms of mysticism. More than the Zohar even, although the Zohar has had a greater effect. This is a whole wide, very interesting subject that time precludes me from going into too much, but you all know what I mean. Now, why is this on Pesach and so forth? There are different aspects to the mysticism, and I'm going to tell you what I think. There are different aspects of mysticism, right? Yesh Me'ayin, Bria, this, that, and the other. One of the interesting, maybe the most important aspect of mysticism is this notion of a chosen people, which has as its corollary a kind of love between God and Jewish people, even though it makes no sense because philosophically God doesn't have love, et cetera, et cetera. Having said all that, the mystics throw that away. And they say, if for whatever reason, meaning it's beyond reason, Hashem loves the Jewish people, and the Jewish people as a people, meaning as an entity, this is like nationalism, the Jewish genius, as it were, the spirit of the whole Jewish people, which they assert exists, beyond merely the sum of its parts. You know, if there are 15 million Jews, or however many, the Jewish people exist beyond that. So that Messias, Klal Yisrael, loves Hashem. Individual Jews, of course, screw up. And that's the history of the Torah and afterwards. And they, of course, know about that, admit it. But Klal Yisrael, as such, has an attraction, a dveikus, to Hashem, and vice versa. And therefore, no matter what we do, even though we screw up, we can't lose our destiny. And Hashem still likes us and saves us, even though he chastises and punishes us this time and that time and so forth. The first manifestation of this would be Yetzias Mitzrayim and Pesach. That's why we read Shir Shum and Pesach. Because there's different ways of reading the Passover narrative. As I always say, one of them is to be rationalistic, and the reason God took the Hebrews out of Israel, even though they don't seem to have deserved it based on the descriptions of the book of Ezekiel and elsewhere, or to use the colloquial language during the Memtesh Shari Toma, because he promised Avram, Baruch Shomer Haftachoso as the Haggadah, which is pretty rational, puts it, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Chishiv Zakeis Lazus K'moshe Nemer L'Avram Avinu. So notice, God is a good businessman. If he signs a check, he stands behind it. If he makes a promise, he stands behind it. He promised Avram, Geri Yezarcha Be'eretz Lohem Avonim Binu Samar B'mei Yashanu V'achrechin Yavo B'chush Gadol. He eats B'chush Gadol. And he keeps it. And if the Klal Yisrael wasn't on the right level to accept it, doesn't matter. As the theory of Memtesh Shari Tumah is, that if he would have stayed longer, it'd be impossible to redeem them. Therefore, he let him out early, right? And he reconfigured the 400 years. Kadosh Baruch Hu Chishiv Zakeis Lazus K'moshe Avinu. So that's a rational way. And the Rambam is famous for saying these words. I remember in the Igeres HaTeiman, which I just opened in front of me, my rusty, trusty Igeres HaTeiman, with the kudos. And he says, remember the Jews in Yemen, that God chose us as a people, not to give us the Torah, all the rest, and not because we deserve it, not because we're better than others. This is not like, what do you call it? The Kuzri or the Chabad, that, you know, we're superior humans or anything like that, the Rambam says. Zosi Torah mitish and nitlai de'adnakal nevim rishonu achronim shabatora zos, he says in the Geres HaTeiman, hivdilonu abor mishar b'nei olam. He picked this out from the rest of humanity. But, as he says, ein zeh lefi she'ayinu ruyim l'kach. It's not because we deserve to get the Torah. El b'chasto shel kadosh baruch hu b'tuvo she'eschadis aleinu ve'itivlonu b'gvil b'shvil k'shekamnu la'avoseinu ma'asim tovim b'yedias habari v'avodaso. Because of the righteousness of our ancestors. Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov deserved it. But we don't. We get it because God promised them he would do so. As Moshe Rabbeinu says explicitly in the Chumash, in Dvarim, Lo mi rubchem mikol amim chashak Hashem uchem. It's not because you're robed, not because you're better than the other of mankind, that God chose you. Chashak Hashem uchem, that God had a cheshik for you, right? No, he had a passion for you. But rather, as the pasuk says in the Chumash, "Mi'avos Hashem eschem u'mishamros hashua shenishal avoseichem." He promised the avos, So that means that, you know, it was in the sense of owing money, as it were, to Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. But the mystical thing, of course, is that Kol Yisrael, Bereishis Bara Elokim Bishvil Yisrael Shebrit Nikareishis, that Kol Yisrael as an entity, as a hypostatic entity, meaning not simply its manifestation in the individual Jews, but the Messias of Kol Yisrael, I'm talking mystical here. So that like predates humanity, predates the world, therefore it's part of the Bria, and therefore Kol Yisrael as an entity can't be destroyed, even though, as we know, unfortunately, individual Jews can be destroyed. That's a basic mystical assertion. And so the original story of Egypt can be understood as a rational payment and of the promise that God deposits on the others. We even say, you know, why did Hashem say, Daber no, be show me Mitzrayim, clay kets, with clay zobas us? Why do they have to say, no, please, you know, take the money from the Egyptians? So how's the language go? Shalo Yomer, they shouldn't say, you know, that he promised Abraham he'd take him out, but he didn't, and he fulfilled that, but he didn't fulfill the promise. So in other words, it's got nothing to do with whether you deserve it. And I want to fulfill the, I got, made a promise, and I keep my promises. So I told Avraham Yitzchak Baruch Hu, no, I want you to take out the money now for that reason. That's like a rational way. The mystical way is a different way. Right? This way is that there's this unbreakable, crazy bond between Klal Yisrael and the Bnei Shalom, and get over it. And get over it. Which, of course, is expressed, if you read it that way, in Shir Hashim. That's the way it was taken. Right? Me, myself, and I, like most people, they say, what's the meaning, plain meaning of Shir Hashem? It's not easy to understand. And first you get the plain meaning, which is about a boy and girl gaga over each other, right? He's nuts over her, she's nuts over him. He walks around all day long, banging into doors, he says, and being hit by the cops and all that. Doesn't mean anything because he's thinking about her. He's nuts over her, which is wonderful. Everybody should feel that way, right? Hopefully. everybody should have somebody that they're nuts over. That's what we believe. However, the higher form is to be nuts over God. That's already a madrega, but nevertheless, you can all see it. You can understand it. Now, having said that, there is a rich tradition of Chazal-type midrashic drush on Shir Hashim, which of course doesn't take any of these things literally, but rather speaks in the terms that I was just saying, which is how is this being understood mystically? Many people roll their eyes because everybody knows the art scroll, and I'm sure you got it in Stone Chumash, declined to translate it literally. Not going to say, Yishokeni Meshikas Pio, Kitom Dedechalai, kiss me with your hot lips. Not going to do that. But rather, they're going to use the language of the Frum stuff. First of all, the art scroll is not going to put out anything erotic. And I get that. You know, I mean, I hear that, even though I'll be regular understanding, first you have to understand Pashup Shop before you go anywhere. And I know people, like I say, roll their eyes and they make smirk and all the rest of it. I get that. Having said that, there does exist a very large and interesting body of Midrashim and Chazals and Gadatov and things like that. And that's a long ago as to the interpretations that the rabbis gave for the different passages in Shir Hashim, which are pretty interesting in their own light. If you can wipe the smirk off your face and treat them as such. And you'll see, by the way, there are many references to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Lucis Asi Rechbi Paro and the crossing of Red Sea. Me, myself, and I said, I don't need any Haggadahs this year. I got Daiva Hoser Haggadahs. But I was at the store looking at something and something caught my eye. And, you know, a nut for Nakudos. I even though people make fun of it. And I saw there's a little Haggadah here from Gedalia Segel. I don't know who he is. I didn't know who he is. And I didn't realize I had this Haggadah. My wife had this Haggadah from decades ago. And it's got little stuff in there. It's all Nakudas. And it's a nice Likud, I would say. The title is Haggadahs Be'er Heitev. Right? And it's a nice Likud. Like I said before, the format appeared to me and all the rest of it. And I saw one or two things, and it was cheap. It was like $12. So I got it. And like I said before, I didn't realize that we had another one before. But I see, when I look through my pile of Agadas, that what he did, and the one I'm looking at is an updated version of the original, and it included a whole section annotated in this kind of a way on the Shir Shirim, which is not in the old one. And I see now that I'm looking at it right now as I'm speaking to you, Tavshin Nun Vav, that he put it out again. He put this Shir Shirim part in, what is it, Tavshin Nun Vav, 1996. Okay? Almost 30 years ago. And I know who he is, because all you say, go, don't mean nothing to me. I just looked at him now before I did this, just now. And I see he's an old Yerushalmi family, and, you know, super frum and all that sort of thing. But he clearly, and he's a Talmud Rosh Ephraim. And, you know, from the Yerushalmis. And he seems to have been into this popularization type stuff. He has a Pirkei Avos edition of a popular sort, which has, again, these, you know, vorts on there. It's Hasidic. See, it's on some Hasidic tales. A lot of Chazals. And a Tehillim. And probably other stuff also. I'm almost just looking now. And I think it's a Chad Becharim, something like that. And by the way, it's funny. I looked, this is all from the last half hour. Some of them are saying, like, it's, oh, he used Art Scroll, you know, the Hebrew Schottenstein. And the other guy writes, Rabbi Yashiv used the Schottenstein also. And the other guy said, baloney. And he said, I was there. He used the Schottenstein. You know, the Chazer over. And they have all back and forth. Rabbi Yashiv used the Schottenstein Gemara, you know, and the Masifta and all the rest of it. I thought that's an interesting topic. But apparently, as best I can tell, he was a popularizer. I mean that in a good way, not a bad way. And when he updated the Haggadah, he did the Shir Shirim part. And it's Menuchot and all the rest of the way I like it. And I'm very impressed with the exposition he provides to all the Pesukim of Shir Shirim, and which he gives you. It's better than the Art Scroll to the English. And to my mind, the way the Art Scroll does in English, doesn't speak. It's a little bit awkward. I don't know what it is. Here he has a nice Hebrew. And he mamash gives you the from stuff. Almost all, as I can tell from Chazal. And he gives you this version of reading of the Shir Shirim, which is very interesting. Once you say, I'm not looking to get the plain meaning, I can do that easily, but I want to see, like I say, what are the traditional readings of it? In which case, you see it's a mystical masterpiece of a certain sort. Just for the heck of it, I thought this was interesting. He says, at the beginning, and again, I liked it, Akudas. What is Kain Alimos Ayvucha? Therefore, all the girls love you. So what does that mean? I'm reading what he says. That's the Reach Shmenecha Tovim. Basos and the flows from Mitzrayim. See the connection with Egypt. When did God have a tremendous Reach? Meaning, when did God have an effect on the world when he did all these nisim in Mitzrayim? And this reputation, right? This smell was as powerful. That's the idea of Shemen Turak Shemecha. Oh Lord, your name was spread like a nice perfume. Meaning, you know, because you swing the perfume, it spreads all over the room. So when you did the Egypt, it spread all over the world. And then it says, Al-Kin Al-Moshe Yivucha. What does it mean, girls love you? V'eshpiyu al-anashim nechbadim u'mas'ola. And the effect, one of the effects of the miracles that you displayed in Har Sinai, in Sees Mitzrayim, was it had ashpa on famous Goyim, Yisro Rochav u'kadoma, like Yisro, like Rochav. Because Yisro says, Ato Yadati, meaning he heard about the Yisis Mitzrayim. And Rochav, if you remember, said to the two spies, we heard about, you know, all the Messias, all the realities of Egypt. Shenis Gairu Venis Karvel or Eloki Shistarba Machne Yisro. That they were Magair because they were drawn to the Or Elki, the divine light, which rested in Machne Yisro. That's a nice, it's a romanticized version. Doesn't mean it's not true. So romanticize is putting in a certain spin. But that's a classic example of how the Midrashic literature, the Medrash on Shir HaShirim, and similar things, because it's not only a Medrash on Shir HaShirim, Agadatos and Shir HaShirim are all over Shas, baby. All over Shas. You may not notice that, you know. You'd have to get, what's it called? Torah Ksuva Masura, that three-volume business by Rabbi Aaron Hyman. It's a wonderful work. Maybe now you don't need it with the internet, but you still do. And he's got, this was a work of a lifetime. On the whole Tanakh, and every place in Chazal, sometimes even Rishonin, where a pasuk is mentioned. And you just get to Shir HaShirim, holy cow. You know, the references are you know, like the sands of the sea. So, there is, as I said before, in Asia, I'm not talking about the Middle Ages, I'm certainly not talking about the 20th century. There is an ancient tradition of darshaning the psukim in Shir HaShirim. And as you just saw, a lot of it has to do in these old translations, in these old renditions of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? I mean, Yetzias Mitzrayim. And, you know, Mashcheni Acharecha Nerusa, and so on and so forth. And I love the fact that he brings out over here, very often as you go through it, references to the Yetzias Mitzrayim, in which case you see why Shir HaShirim was associated in the ancient customs of reading it on Passover time. I compare you, my beloved, to one of Pharaoh's horses. Now, I wouldn't call that a comeback, a pickup line today. Say to a girl, "Babe, you look like a nice horse." You know? But that's what he's saying. No, he says like this: "The Susi Brichmi Pharaoh, Kasher Asafti Kvutzes Chaylus Malachim, Lelachim Kesus and Biyom Krom Nigav Brichmi Pharaoh." When I gathered a bunch of Chaylus Malachim, bunch of legions of angels, like horses, like battle horses. Neged Rechli Paro, Vishtaktios Chomitza Aritzayach, and I told you to stop crying to me, because I will take care of you, God said. As he said to Moshe, Hashem Yelochim Lachem Batem Tachrishun. You may not appreciate this as putting into modern succinct Hebrew a whole business from the Medrash, Medrash Rabbah. So, I don't get any money by plugging this, but I like it very much. And if you're the type that says Shir HaShirim over the course of the year, which many have that custom, say on Friday, and things like that, I would recommend this. As I said before, we get a hold of it somewhere. Maybe it's online. You know, I don't know. But so it's looking at the Shir HaShirim as a testimony to the mystical relationship. You know what I'm saying? That even the Rambam does say, in certain ways, like in the letter to Yemen, that, what do you call it? Where is it over here? That there are passages in the Shir HaShirim, that's basically what he puts down there, which are definitely referring to this mystical aspect. I'm thinking, one second here. Here it is. About the Shulamis, you know. How does it say over here? In chapter 7. We just read this today. I'm realizing when people say Shir HaShirim, they just roll through it. Or if somebody recites it in Shul, they just, you know, sleep through it. I get that. But it's interesting, if you get past all that, and to be perfectly honest, to read the plain translation, which is interesting in a certain way, doesn't stay interesting long. But if you read the very rich ideational literature that's popped up on it, you see this paean of praise to this mystical relationship, which, by the way, lies at the very heart of the definition of chosen people. Right now, the Jewish people are under siege with the colleges and all the rest of it, as you know. And it's just interesting to me, historically, that in the modern era, one of the things that many Jews are uncomfortable with, reform, considered secular, even modern Orthodox sometimes, is the notion of Alma Nivchar, chosen people. It sounds racist. And I do get it, meaning I won't go around telling it to people. I understand how a turnoff can be. And it does lie at the heart of a certain type of anti-Semitism. You Jews think you're better, you know. And as the Rambam himself says, the Rambam says the source of anti-Semitism, one of the sources is that according to the biblical account, God gave the Ten Commandments to one group and not the others. You understand? Now, there is a certain, what's the right word? Discrimination, choosing, like Joseph and the brothers giving to one brother the coat. Think about this. Passover can be represented as a holiday of freedom. That's how it was in the famous movie with Charlton Heston. The slaves get their freedom. And it is true that many slave groups and depressed groups around the world in history have read the story of Passover and Moses and Pharaoh as a kind of a narrative to which they can identify, like the Negroes in the slavery in the South and all the rest. They identify with Moses, the children of Israel, as opposed to the slave master was a Pharaoh. I mean, I get that, and that's true. And that's just part of the fact that the Torah, for some reason, resonates with people the way other ancient documents do not. That's just interesting. But really, 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 at the end of the day, the Torah is a very discriminating type of document. Because, think of it, I always like to point out, when the Jews left Egypt, was that the end of slavery? As a matter of fact, was that the end of slaves in Egypt? Or were the Jews one group of slaves among others? And the answer is the latter. It's not that they enslaved the Jews and said all the other slaves can leave or get sold elsewhere or fired or whatever. Egypt was a slave economy. All the nations were like that. And all the nations were like that. And slave labor is something you use as labor. Labor is worth money. So what happened in Pesach was one specific group got out, not the others. As a result of the 10 plagues, it doesn't say that Pharaoh proclaimed Emancipation Proclamation like Abraham Lincoln and everybody can leave. He said to one particular group, B'nei B'chari Yisrael. From day one, when Moshe showed up, it's a very Shir Hashem, it's a very racist type of art. B'nei B'chari Yisrael. You can have whoever you want as slaves, not my son, not Klal Yisrael. And when they left, this specific group of Jews left, not the others. Like I said, we saw that recently manifested, I've said this many times, with the Ethiopian Jews, in which if you know the story, Ethiopia is a terrible country, there's a war going on and all the rest of it. The Jews, I'm collapsing a lot of details into a simple story. Israel flew in the planes and took out this particular group of Jews. They did it later on refugee camps in Sudan and things like that. Now, wait a minute. Is millions of Africans suffering from the civil war and the famine and all the junk in East Africa, in Ethiopia, in those places, the war is going on as we speak. And yet, one group got out and the others did not get out. Right? So is this a case of showing that you transcend racism, the white people helping black people? Or is it no? Kol Yisrael Chaverim. Since we regard you as Jewish, once you get past that, so then we're saving you because you're Jewish. So you're like a quote-unquote Amma Nivchar. You get out of Ethiopia and Sudan and those terrible places, you come to Israel. You see? So it's not a vort in a generalized kind of proposition that applies to all people, but rather Amma Nivchar. And believe me, in the modern world, one thing you can't say is Amma Nivchar, which is why the Reform Movement and the Reconstructionists and others all took it away, or they try to reinterpret it. We're not a chosen people, or for me, we're chosen to serve mankind, blah, blah, blah. I understand why they say that. But it turns out it's not true. As a matter of fact, the Orthodox are still defined by believing that they're Amma Nivchar. And that's why they don't feel as betrayed currently as we speak. For all the liberals and the others who are screwing Israel and abandoning the Jews and letting them fester on their campuses. I just looked tonight after the answer online and they're saying in Colombia, wherever it is, kill the Jews and things like that. And they're like freaking out. Ohavayu, Makrivayu, Hamerimuni, however the expression goes. But a firm person is like, I'm not surprised. Right? I mean, you have to fight it. I'm not surprised. And they're just, they hate the Jews. And one of the reasons they do Zama Nivchar. Matter of fact, the very heart of the Gaza war and the Palestinian problem lies down to the fact that they say, we were here, you stole our land from us, and we say, Zama Nivchar, it's our land. like the very first Rashi in the Chumash. So the whole message of the Sheir Shirim is very tsugapas for Pesach. Because Pesach, of all the holidays, if you think about it, right, is the one in which this passion and this divine intervention on behalf of a specific group, for the benefit of that group over against the other groups, is manifested. Shavuos, yes, you know, not as dramatically. Sukkos, not as dramatically. Passover becomes a dramatic part, at least to me. I think that's why our ancestors, reading Shir Hashirim, if I can use this term in the art school way, you understand? Reading Shir Hashirim in that way, our ancestors, you know, latched on to Shir Hashirim as a testimony to the significance of the Yetzias Mitzrayim as a sign of God's, not love, but being nuts over us, passion, you see? And it's very interesting. Now, I'll tell you again, the Rambam and the others, you know, go into this at a fair length. I have the page here somewhere. And where he says, Shubi Shubi HaShulam, here it is. Shlomo Melch, this is the Rambam talking. I'm translating from the Hebrew. It's, you know, the Keres Taman is in Arabic. But he's using the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim, where they say, Shubi Shubi HaShulam, Shubi Shubi Nechzebach. Come here, baby, let's check you out. That's what the words mean. Shlomo Melch compared, meaning the author of Shir Hashirim compared the Klal Yisrael to a girl who's a tachlis by Yofi Shein Lo Dovi. She's a knockout. Yofi Shein Bo Dovi. She never kulach Yofi Rasi Umumim Bach. And he says the other umos and svaros, the other nations and the ones who are trying to mislead the Jews, Shirotzin Lo Mashiach Aleihem. He's talking about like, what's the right word? You know, like inner city jive artists who are shtufim bezima, and mafatim noshim meuschayel hasik min tavasim acheres, and they're gigolos. They make a living of seducing pretty girls from chasha families and using all kind of words of flattery and seduction in order to attain their lustful goals. That's been the history of Klal Yisrael, metaphorically. The learned nations, the Christians, the Muslims, have been doing like that also. That they're using all kind of nice words, all the rest of it, to attain their lustful goals to us. And the Rambam goes on to say, hoping that we'll fall for their web of lies. And then he says the Jewish people answer back, how's it, what's the language over there? One second. Shubi shubi shalom shubi nechzeb. Listen to this. Shubi shubi ashulam is shubi shubi nechzeboch. Ma techzeb ashulam is kibbel mechol is machanoyim. Which he understands to mean that this low-life jive artist is saying, come here, baby. Shubi shubi ashulam is shubi nechzeboch. You looking fine today. Lechzeboch. Let's look you over. Let's check you out. Which goes on in Baltimore and every other city all the time. And the chush of a girl spurns him by saying, Ma techzeb shalomis? What are you looking at the shalomis? Kimacholos machanoyim? Are you a macholos machanoyim? Which the Rambam understands to mean, Sha'uma toin kenegdom bomeris. That we say to those religions, let's say the Christians, the Muslims, whoever, Harunim kimo amayman arsine, shoy machne olim machne zemulum azeh. Did you ever have an encounter? Can you provide me? It's like a girl would say like this. I got a real boyfriend. He's a millionaire. What can you stupid jive turkey? What can you offer me? And saying nothing. So I have a boyfriend, Hashem. And he gave me Maamar Har Sinai. And Maamar Har Sinai was Mechol Samachanoim. There were the angels and the other things like that. It was a splendid occasion, you know. And you can't do that. Therefore, your religion offers no interest to me. See, the Rambam is taking this, of course, that's a metaphor, but it's a mystical metaphor. You see what I'm saying? It's the Jewish people are saying the Klal Yisrael is a mystical hypostatic entity. It's saying to the Goyim as hypostatic mystical entity or set of entities. And so you end up reading even the Rambam, the whole Shir Hashirim, in this very mystical kind of way. I've gone a little bit too far, but a little over in time. But you see where I'm heading over here. And so if you're interested in what I said, maybe in the last days, you got nothing better to do. Check out the Shir Hashem. If you take my advice, look in the bookstores over there, whether in America or elsewhere, probably see, is it cheap? It's like 10, 12 bucks. This is Be'er Heter, Haggadah, from Gedalia Segel. And you'll see, and now you don't need this. I mean, you can look up the Mepharshim himself. I just, me, myself, and I find this interesting and attractive. And it's a nice tamsis of the classic interpretations of Chazal that you find very from, no question about it, of how the Jewish people in their tradition have absorbed and interpreted the Song of Songs. With that, I wish everybody a good morning. I want to thank once again Mishpachas Stefanski for being always our best sponsors, and hope everybody will have a good Yom Tov.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.